Support for The Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette-Mail with two editorial pages, one progressive, one conservative, kind of like The Front Porch. Check it out at wvgazettemail.com. And you're on The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and this week we'll be talking with ACLU of West Virginia Director Joseph Cohen. I'm joined by Rick Wilson. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And Lori Lynn, Sherlock fan. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
We're debating whether to turn this into the Sherlock fan episode.
Do it.
All right. We'll think about it. Joseph, thanks for joining us today.
I'm so happy to be here.
Joseph, I just want to acknowledge that, you know, we're here face-to-face in person, and you haven't taken either my guns or my Bible so far. are you guys slacking off or what?
You know, the ACLU gets a bad rap for being anti-religion or anti-Christian, but we represent Christians many, many times through the years.
What are some of the big issues you guys are looking at the legislature this year?
We're afraid that some of the more outrageous things that Donald Trump advocated for nationally could embolden people here on the state level also. So we're going to be a watchdog in the state this year. One piece of legislation that we're really going to be advocating strongly for is a change to the state's hate crimes law. So the ACLU has what I would call a nuanced position on hate crimes law. On the one hand, you know, we are longtime supporters of civil rights and the civil rights movement. On the other hand, freedom of speech and freedom of association. So any hate crimes law that we would support would have to ensure that it's not going to punish people based on their constitutionally protected speech or associations. West Virginia currently has a hate crimes law. We see a couple of problems with the law, so we're going to push for three changes to the hate crimes law as it stands. The first would be to tighten up some language to ensure that people's constitutionally protected speech and associations are not the basis for a prosecution. It's an attempt to ensure that prosecutors would not try to convict somebody who's just a bigot, you know, but has not committed an actual crime, an actual hate crime, who's a member of the Klan. Well, that's not a crime, and that person, no matter how odious you may consider their speech to be, that person should not be convicted of a crime. So we want to clean up some of that language a little bit. The second change that we would propose is that the current law does not protect people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. The third change we're proposing, we would like to introduce the concept of restorative justice into hate crimes. So restorative justice is a notion that the victims and the community that was targeted, their concerns are really taken into effect. And that the perpetrator, the person who was convicted of committing a crime, that there's a real attempt to rehabilitate them. Let me give you an example. So I'm Jewish. If somebody spray painted a swastika on my front door, under West Virginia law, they could be convicted of vandalism and they could be convicted of a hate crime. Now, for the hate crime, you could serve 10 years in prison. Who does that help? Does that help me, the victim, the person who had this swastika painted on my door? No, I don't feel any better. Does it help the Jewish community? Not really. Does it do anything to try to rehabilitate the offender? Well, this guy's going to spend 10 years in prison with other white supremacists. It doesn't seem like this is really healing the community in any way. West Virginia already has a community corrections statute. It's already available. But we want to get it directly into the hate crimes because we think that hate crimes specifically could be used to really make a dramatic impact in healing communities and in combating hate.
One other issue that I'm real concerned about and that West Virginia's made bipartisan progress on is juvenile justice and truancy reform. ACLU and other groups are interested in taking a next step and also looking at mental health of young people involved before they get sent into the court system. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So an issue that we've been working on for years now is reforming the juvenile justice system and trying to break that school to prison pipeline. So this year, we're going to be pushing for a pilot program to be instituted in one or two school districts around the state. The main focus of the program would be to divert students who are facing, would traditionally be facing school discipline, detentions, suspensions, expulsions. Before it gets to that point, we want to try to have them receive mental and behavioral health interventions to try to really get to the root cause of what's causing these, you know, frequently minor disruptions in school. Well, those minor disruptions, and once you get in that juvenile, that disciplinary system, the next step so frequently is the juvenile justice system. And then the next step so frequently is you're an adult in prison. So what we're going to focus on is school districts that currently have school-based mental and behavioral health intervention programs, we're going to try to get one or two, the legislature to pass a pilot program where one or two of these schools will really focus on students going through the mental and behavioral health intervention rather than the school-based disciplinary program.
Which would probably be some kind of screening and then maybe referral.
You know, it's funny. A couple of weeks ago, right before Christmas, the ACLU staff and some board members threw a pizza party for kids at a juvenile facility. And I got to sit down and have lunch with these kids and really talk to them. And some of the stories I heard, they were absolutely heartbreaking. Kids who ended up in it's essentially a prison. I mean, I'm not going to pull punches. It looks and feels like any other jail or prison I've been in. I met a girl, a 17-year-old girl who was there. She was caught with a joint, and she'd been there for over a month. And she thought she was going to get out after 6 days, but her father showed up at the hearing and said, "I don't want her out." Now, I don't know what's going on in that family, but she's in this, essentially a jail. She's been there for a month for a joint at 17 years old. Honestly, if I could give one piece of advice to people who are interested in this issue, it's to reach out to some of these kids who are in these facilities. I learned so much, and I was inspired by them and meeting them, and it gave me a much better understanding of what it's like to be a kid in those situations.
And we'll take a break. When we get back, we'll talk more about what Trump's election means for the ACLU and some of the things that they're concerned about. But first, you're listening to The Front Porch because 10,000 West Virginians and people from all across the country, actually, support West Virginia Public Broadcasting through their annual donation. It's their membership. Well, it's a new year, and it's a time to consider your listening. If you enjoy this, support it. Go to wvpublic.org, click that donate button, and give whatever feels right. Thanks. And we're back, and we're talking with Joseph Cohen. He's the executive director of the ACLU of West Virginia. And we're going to ask him some questions now about the Trump administration and how the ACLU plans to respond.
So we wanted to talk about Trump.
Yeah.
Obviously, the ACLU as a national organization is sounding the alarm over the incoming Trump administration. What would you say your top three concerns are about Donald Trump as president?
He's not yet the president, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen. But if we take him at his word with his campaign promises, there's a whole series of really shocking anti-civil liberties promises or threats he made during the campaign. Obviously, one is his statement that he was planning on rounding up 11 million undocumented people within the first 2 years of his presidency. To do that, I mean, if you really just do the math, he would have to round up and process and deport 15,000 people every single day, 7 days a week for 365 days a year to make that happen. I just don't see any way it would be possible to do that without engaging in unlawful profiling, violations of people's equal protection, violations of their due process. How you would process those number of deportations if you could round those people up is unfathomable. Well, the second big issue that we're going to be looking at the ACLU of West Virginia is the treatment of Muslims and Muslim Americans. You know, Donald Trump has made a number of statements during his campaign that if he carried them out would be clear, we believe would be clear violations of the U.S. Constitution. For example, at one point during the campaign, he talked about shutting off access to the United States from Muslims abroad, including possibly American citizens who happen to travel abroad. Obviously, clear violation of the First Amendment. That campaign promise seems to have morphed somewhat over time into now there's discussion of preventing foreign nationals from certain countries from coming to the United States. Now, to the extent that these countries that people are prevented from coming from are predominantly Muslim, I think courts would really look at this and say national origin is just a pretext, that the real reason, you know, based on the circumstantial evidence, other things that they've said, the real reason they're trying to ban people is based on their religion. We would argue that that's unconstitutional. And the third, you know, there's a lot of different issues, but I think the third is freedom of the press and freedom to dissent. President-elect Trump is not even in office yet, and we've seen a tremendous amount of people engaging in protest activity around the country. The ACLU holds this very special place in our society in that we protect people's freedom of speech and freedom to dissent. And so we are going to be making a concerted effort to ensure that people have the right to express their freedom to associate and freedom of speech, and we would fight any attempts to infringe upon those freedoms.
A lot of people want to say that Trump is unique, that he represents a really abnormal threat to American democracy. But then, for example, he's going to nominate someone to fill Justice Scalia's seat on the Supreme Court. I imagine that the ACLU and a lot of like-minded organizations are going to oppose that person based on things like, their position on Roe versus Wade, things that wouldn't be different if, say, Jeb Bush had won the presidency or Marco Rubio, kind of a garden variety Republican. So when you attack him based on those kinds of things, that makes me want to defend the guy. Do you have a sense that, there's kind of a two baskets of Trump concerns, kind of an ordinary concern from the left and the concern that he is a kind of a unique threat?
Well, I won't speak on behalf of other organizations, but what I can say from the ACLU's perspective is, first of all, we will not oppose Donald Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court. We have never opposed a presidential nominee or a judicial nominee in the ACLU's history, and we're not going to start now. We are a nonpartisan organization.
So you don't make statements or anything like that?
We will educate the public on candidates or a nominee's track record, but we do not support or oppose judicial or presidential nominees. But more to your question, since we're not a political organization, since we're an issue-based organization, yeah, Donald Trump ran a very unusual presidential campaign. He said things that we've not heard before and things that civil libertarians would find very disturbing. And we're sounding the alarm about that. I take a person at their word. When they say they're going to do something, there's nothing we can do but take them at their word. But the ACLU is opposed to limitations on abortion rights. So, yeah, we would, if a run of the, garden variety traditional Republican were to pass a law that banned abortion, yeah, we're going to fight them on that, and we're going to file a lawsuit. We're going to fight them in the legislature. We'll do that with Donald Trump the same we would do that with anybody else. But yeah, I mean, he has said things, and he has advocated for things that have shocked the conscience, that are new and shock the conscience.
So you talk on your website about how you're committed to protecting the civil liberties in the Bill of Rights. The Second Amendment is obviously part of the Bill of Rights. I didn't see anything about that on your website. Do you believe that individual West Virginians have the right to keep and bear arms?
Yeah, you know what I mean? The ACLU's policy on that has been in flux through the years. To the extent it matters, my personal opinion is yes. And I did not agree with the National ACLU's former policy. But anybody who looks at our record would see that we're not anti-gun. We've been written up in Field and Stream for our support of Second Amendment issues. And if Sunday hunting comes up in the legislature this year, which we fully expect it will, we'll be supporting it.
I have a question about one issue that has gotten a lot of traction at the state level, or resolutions for a constitutional convention. I'm curious, and I think there's been some national press about how after the election, those have gained momentum, possibly. What's the position on that kind of issue?
We oppose that here in West Virginia because, even with the best intentions, we have a mechanism for amending the Constitution. So if you see a problem with the Constitution, we already have a way to make changes. But once you open up the Constitution to a convention, I mean, so many of the fundamental principles that our country was built upon and that are steadfast, rock-solid ACLU principles, because of that, they could all go out the window also. So we opposed it in West Virginia, and I think ACLUs are opposing it around the country.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly opposed to it. And I think, it kind of raises the question, what does it mean to be conservative? Does it mean to respect things that have been here and, stood the test of time? And that doesn't seem like a conservative approach.
Well, I guess the last thing that I would like to make sure I make mention of is, sort of since the election, we've seen this incredible groundswell of energy. People who've not been involved in politics, people who have not been involved in activism in the past, have been reaching out to us. It started the day after the election, to be honest with you. Membership has increased by 30%. In the first month after the election, the ACLU of West Virginia's membership increased by more than 30%. But dozens and dozens of people who have just looking for something to do. They want to get involved and volunteer. So to respond to that sort of energy and an attempt to focus that energy in a positive manner, we've instituted this citizen activist training program where we're going around the state holding a series of presentations. Each presentation covers a different civil liberties issue from the ACLU's perspective and a different skill building exercise for being an effective citizen activist. Please consider taking part in these citizen activist trainings. We've had really good response from them so far.
So we have a tradition here of ending the show on a Bible verse. And I'm not going to make the obvious joke about the ACLU and Bible verses, but Rick, what we got this week?
Well, I thought it would be appropriate to find one about freedom. So I got Galatians 5:13. For you are called to freedom, brethren, only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love be servants of one another.
I would also like to say that I'm not an ACLU member. I disagree with the organization frequently, but I do carry around in my wallet this little card from the ACLU that's what to do if you are stopped by the police, know your rights. And so I appreciate things like that. That's something that I always keep on my person.
What are you doing in your car that makes you needing to carry this card?
Don't answer that question without a lawyer.
Exactly. That's the whole point. I'm not doing anything, but you never know when you could be stopped. So that's the issue.
That's Lori Lynn, co-host with Rick Wilson and me, Scott Finn. And we've been talking to Joseph Cohen, who's the executive director of ACLU of West Virginia. Joseph, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And that's The Front Porch. See you next week.